Blog Talk Radio.
Saturday,
1 p.m.
Eastern Standard Time,
and
you're listening to you with your host, Avenger Satanus, and the Beast.
Hi, thanks for tuning into the U's. It's T.C. Downey with my co-host, Avenger Satanus. Avenger, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good. How are you doing?
Oh, considering all the mishaps this morning, I'm in a fairly good mood, so I can't complain.
That's good. Well, hopefully the video that I uploaded last night will get us some more attention and some more listeners, and hopefully people, now that they know what topics are going to come up soon, will be able to tune in to whatever they want to listen to and even call in and discuss whatever it is they feel like talking about.
Right. Actually, we encourage them to call in at any point in time during the show and throw in their 2 cents, but now they've got no excuse.
That's right. No excuse. No excuses, bitches. You hear that? Victor doesn't want to hear anything about, oh, I didn't know you guys were talking about this or that, or, oh, my God, I slept in, or I didn't get up in time, or, you know, my panties were too much bunched up in my shorts, whatever. No excuses.
Speaking of the ooze, man, I don't know if a lot of people who listen are aware of this. They probably are, but the ooze, it kind of has a driving force that's working behind it on a constant basis. And that force is the Cult of Cthulhu. Obviously, you know, you and I are no strangers to this.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm the high priest, as most people hopefully know, and you are the one and only priest of Relay, and that is the rank or degree just below high priest. So we're the two, you know, most powerful and senior members of the cult. So the show basically becomes a de facto mouthpiece for the Cthulhu cult. So everything you hear is basically in sync with our philosophy and our religion and the great old ones and the work.
Right. So, I mean, in all, it really makes it an interesting platform for us to deliver information to people. I think that what happens, though, is because we only have these short hour segments and we're only doing them once a week, we don't really get much of a chance to go into what the cult itself is actually about. And so I think, you know, maybe first a brief understanding of how it came about would be in order.
Sure. That sounds good. Well, I guess, as I was telling Beat Zeno just before the show, I felt called to do this work and to start the Cthulhu cult. I just felt like someone should be doing it, and it needed to come into being. And if not me, who? And if not now, when? So it just became something that I felt I had to do and a part of my destiny. And I believe it is the Cthulhu cult's destiny to, I guess, rise above whatever we can, society, reality, other left-hand path groups that aren't doing as much or aren't as progressive or evolved, and to awaken ourselves and as much of humanity as possible. So that's the big thing, is transformation, reaching new levels of higher consciousness, and basically we call that awakening, because we understand the normal human experience to be much like sleep. A lot of people are sleepwalking through life. Pretty much everybody is, about 99% of humanity, and that's no slur on anyone. It's not like I'm saying that, you know, we're inherently better or something because we're awake and you're all asleep. You know, I'm asleep too a lot of times. Everybody is. That's just our natural state. That's just the way our world works and how the universe wants it. But there are certain techniques for waking up, and that's what the Cthulhu cult is all about. That and bringing the old ones back, and at the same time, it's a very selfish and materialistic and ego-driven left-hand path religion, much like Satanism. We want certain things. We want, you know, pleasure and recognition and, you know, big screen TV and, you know, a nice house and a good job with, you know, lots of sex. So we try to fit in all possible things that the left-hand path is all about.
Right. Now, after this initial call-in, what steps did you take in place to actually form the Cthulhu cult?
Let's see, what steps I take. On the night of Lovecraft's birthday, August 20th, I performed a special ritual about 120 feet in the air, because at that time I was living on the top floor, the 12th floor, of the building I own, and I had all these green lights around me. I had the sliding glass door open into the night and into the balcony, and you know, I performed this ritual to conceive of the Cthulhu cult, and I just wanted something that I could lead and I could manage and bring forth into the world. And something that would help myself and other people around me. Something that could do what other philosophies or religions couldn't do or wasn't doing, like Satanism or the Temple of Set or, I don't know, the, you know, Thelema groups and chaos magic and pretty much anything under the sun. You know, I was looking and I was immersed in a ton of different groups and ideologies. And a lot of things touched on what I was interested in, but nothing was really at the core. Plus, I always felt I wanted to lead a group myself, and that was my calling. And so I thought it was just natural for me to start a cult of Cthulhu right out of Lovecraft's fiction. And so that's what I did. Now you, Bizzino, when we first started talking, you always felt in your life that you were called, or that you had a destiny for something greater. Can you talk to us about that and tell us just what, you know, what usually goes through your mind, or what in the last few years you've been thinking about with that?
Sure. I think to give a brief synopsis of the actual history of it, I was born a relatively ill child. I had spinal meningitis, which medically in the 70s, which 76 is the year I was born in, it wasn't a real understood illness here in the United States. Medically, we weren't as advanced as some of the Eastern cultures, and even some of our brother and sister Western cultures over in Europe were a little more advanced than us as far as practice and medicine goes, and or at least in the study of this particular illness, which was spinal meningitis. At about 3 months old, went into a 106-degree fever, and I was in a coma for, I believe, 10 days or something like that. And now this is, I guess, where things kind of got weird or extremely coincidental. A young doctor from Turkey was over here doing an internship because she was looking to move to the United States. And she just happened to walk past my room and see my my grandparents and my mother and everybody all around me in prayer. And she picked up my chart and she looked and she recognized the symptoms, and she went in and she asked if she could run a couple of extra tests on me. And, she pretty much revived me and very little damage. Since then, my grandparents, and I guess maybe my feeling of destiny might have something to do with this, but my grandparents have always pushed the concept on me that I was brought back from the land of the dead for something greater, and it's, been reestablished multiple times in my life as I've met death face to face. As you get older, you begin to, grow somewhat of resentment for the condition of this world and, modern things that you're supposed to accept, like, one of the three big religions and, certain parameters that society lays out for you. And so by my mid-20s, I was a pretty astute atheist and I would say I'm thus the passive form. And, I studied Satanism from probably about the age of 15 until, now I still study the philosophy of it. Sure. And, then something miraculous kind of happened. I had a child. And in my mind, things just sort of started changing. It seemed like all of a sudden I was stepping into destiny every step that I took. And then I was also presented a couple of times by a good friend of mine who I believe to be a very reliable and competent witch. She had had some visions involving me, and she stated that I had destiny as well. And then in the passion of art, I was attempting to write a fictional story. I needed some help, and that's how I got in touch with you.
Yeah, that's right. So I think you said, to me months ago when we first started talking that you felt drawn to me and to my writing and possibly my artwork too, and you felt sort of a kinship and a calling to me and what I was doing and my efforts. Is that right?
Absolutely. I don't mean to really downplay that. There's just so much information to put out and not nearly enough time. So.
Yeah, I think a lot of people feel that way too. I mean, certain ideas resonate with people. And the stronger and clearer those ideas are, I think, potentially the greater resonance or vibration exists. And hopefully that's coming through loud and clear, and people are picking up on that, and the right kind of people are getting the message and wanting to pick up the torch and lead the way along with me. I think a lot of people believe in a certain kind of destiny or fate for themselves. Maybe they feel like they've lost their way a lot of times, but I think deep down, many people recognize that there's a sense of purpose for them, something they're supposed to be doing, something they're meant to be doing, and a lot of times they're not actively or currently doing it. You know, they've kind of fallen away, which is very easy to do because this world is full of nothing if not distractions and illusions and lies. It's very hard to get a true sense of yourself and your ultimate purpose, your special plan. But again, I think that's what the Cthulhu cult is all about, is reawakening those ideas and that destiny and being able to follow it with others of like mind and like destiny.
I absolutely agree with you. In fact, I think that what often happens, like my situation in particular, you don't find yourself seeking to join the Cthulhu cult. You just find yourself submersed in it.
Right.
It's not something, you know, I've never been one to just run out and join this organization or that organization. I never, you know, picked up a Church of Satan membership card because I wasn't going to pay $200 to hold a laminated piece of fucking paper that said that I believe in something different.
As far as I know, they don't even laminate it. because I was one of those cards back when it only cost $100 back in, I don't know, the 90s. But, yeah, pretty soon after that, I realized the worthlessness of that little card. In fact, I tried to mail it back to them, but by then, I think the Black House had either gone into foreclosure or been demolished, and there was really, I don't know, nothing left for me there. And that was another synchronicity that led to me forming the Cthulhu cult. You know, just an inability for me to function successfully in someone else's group, someone else's paradigm, someone else's ego trip, which is the current Church of Satan. And I'm on the fence about the Temple of Set. I mean, I had a lot of cool synchronicities there. I met a few people, didn't really strike up any kind of friendship or mentoring type scenario, but the reading list alone really led me to some new paths, specifically the Fourth Way. But there were other books on magic and the left-hand path that were really extraordinary. But yeah, the Temple of Set is kind of a closed-minded or closed-off group. You know, they don't associate with outsiders. They just kind of keep to themselves. And which is too bad, because they do use a lot of Lovecraft with their whole Egyptology, occultism, and, you know, Setianism, and the satanic aspect. I think they use the Fourth Way and possibly chaos magic, and certainly Lovecraft to some degree. And it would be great to have more cross-pollination between the two groups, but I don't think they want that. So for now, we're just going to work on our own. But we're very open. You know, we don't expect people to pay us money, and we don't expect people to follow a certain line all the time with, you know, with dogma or, you know, certain responsibilities. You know, if people would just want to be casual members, that's understandable. But if they want to be deeper immersed in what we're doing and more active, then that's great too. Then they can rise above to different levels, such as the Wizards of the Terrible Darkness. And as you know, that's what we're doing now. We're looking for new leaders in our cult and new people that can add some new ideas and some lifeblood. Basically, it's a shock. We're trying to create a shock in a Fourth Way sense to the Cthulhu cult, and get it from the natural curve of things, where you know, things go in a certain direction, and then they kind of slide downward because that's just the natural way of, you know, entropy and degeneration. But if you add a shock, then it can keep going straight forward to where it's supposed to go, to its ultimate destination. So that's what we're doing now. We're trying to find new Wizards of the Terrible Darkness to add to our ranks and bolster the leadership positions in the cult. And that's like a shock to our system, just like self-remembering is a shock to the individual, and it keeps them on the path to awakening.
Right, and I think that people need to understand that the core principle of the Cult of Cthulhu is that awakening.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, our great work is the work that is done inside of ourselves.
Right.
Now, this requires us to also, generate work on the outside of us, because you have to keep that balance. I believe it was Gurdjieff that basically stated that if all the work you do is inside yourself, then I'm trying to figure out exactly what his words were, but the concept of it was that you would, in fact, implode. The pressure, the unbalance of the outside would cause you to implode, where if you kept the work balanced internally and externally, then you would be able to grow and flourish in that. I'm not quite sure where the hell I read that, but just recently, before last week's show.
There's a lot more of Gurdjieff that I want to read. As I've said before, a lot of my exposure to the Fourth Way is from Ouspensky and a man named Maurice Nickel, who wrote some great, like, giant volume commentaries on the Fourth Way. I'm familiar with Gurdjieff, but I haven't read a ton of his, like, direct writing.
I don't really think there is.
Because it's good stuff.
I don't think there is a lot of actual direct writing by Gurdjieff. I know he did do a few pieces.
Yeah,
but I think most of it is Ouspensky. I'm trying to remember any of the other guys' names offhand. I'm not sitting in front of a computer like I normally am. So
there's quite a few. There's a man named Orridge, and I think Thomas de Hartmann, and several others. Ouspensky, like we mentioned, and Maurice Nickel.
There was a Bennett character, I believe,
right.
Was his name.
Yeah.
And perhaps it was Bennett that actually had the quote of Gurdjieff that I was trying to reference.
That could be. But now that we mention it, the Gurdjieff strikes me or strikes us as kind of like Plato / Socrates, kind of. But wasn't Socrates like the philosopher, and then he went around asking people questions, and then it was Plato that sort of was his disciple or student, and he wrote down pretty much everything that Socrates was saying or his basic thinking. I guess you can liken it to Jesus, who, went around and said a bunch of stuff, but it was really the apostles that wrote down things that he was saying and that he was doing, and the work lived on through him. It was through these other people that sort of wrote it all down. Gurdjieff didn't write a ton of stuff, and Jesus himself didn't write a ton of stuff, but their followers and their disciples and their students, took all those messages and all those verbal stories and parables and philosophies, and then wrote it down themselves and spread it and disseminated it throughout the world.
Right. Well, not to stray too far off the topic, trying to think of what I was going to say. There's been a lot of activity lately involving the 2012 phenomenon, and the cult has actually has come up with a proactive solution or potential use for the energies that are being put into that 2012
right.
deadline.
Yes, we're commandeering that deadline or that period in history where, you're right, so much energy is already being projected onto that specific time that we want to use that for our purpose. And I think we can. I think, whether we influence it or we hijack it or, maybe that's our destiny. Maybe the whole 2012 phenomenon that the Mayans are picking up on directly relates to us. I mean, I think we're making, great strides in the left-hand path community and in the world. And so, who knows? Perhaps the 2012 prophecies directly relate to the Cthulhu cult. I'm not going to put that beyond us. That's definitely a possibility and a theory. And even if it isn't, I think we can use that energy and that, all that focus that's being put.
That kind of actually plays off of some of the research that I was trying to do prior to this show. And the idea that occurred to me that it was possible that something resembling the Cthulhu cult had existed aeons ago, and Lovecraft was just tapping a channeled memory of it when he was writing it down. But my research obviously proved, proved futile because it's a fictional organization. But on the other hand, just because it hasn't been written down doesn't mean that it didn't at one point exist.
Right. That's interesting. That suddenly brings to mind an idea that if you change the present, then it's possible to change not only the future, but also the past. And so if we change the present moment through conscious action and believing that the Cthulhu cult is a real thing, which we know it is because we manifested it ourselves, then really that's just a small leap of faith over to believing that it existed all along, that it existed, thousands of years before Lovecraft lived, and that it will exist thousands of years after Lovecraft died.
Well, I certainly know that the none of the ideas or philosophies that are pushed through are, anything brand new or never been thought of before.
Exactly. It's a very old philosophy. And as Gurdjieff said, the power of the work, the gravitas or the immensity behind the great work is that it doesn't come from human minds. It doesn't just appear from the workers in the field or the warriors or even the philosophers or the people in charge, the kings and the royalty and the aristocracy. It comes from directly from higher mind. It comes from outside, which basically means it's coming from the great old ones or whatever extraterrestrial entities are out there communicating with a few individuals, a few dreamers and mad occultists.
Well, I know one thing is absolutely for certain. We won't meet the stagnation that other attempts at freeing themselves from the current predominant paradigm have met. And that's not due to any other thing other than the fact that we're not afraid to roll up our sleeves and get dirty.
That's very true. I think a lot of groups decide that once they've established themselves and they're just like, okay, we're here, you know, enough said, you know, maybe they do some extra promotion and try to get members and you know, carry on with the business of just surviving or existing. But the whole raison d'etre of the Cthulhu cult is work. And it's doing the work and being part of the great work and struggling to awaken and fighting all the forces between us and higher states of consciousness. And it's a daily struggle that everybody involved in this work goes through. And once you get in the habit of it, of being active and doing the work and putting in the struggle and the efforts, then you know, once it's a routine, it's easier to do. And once we're active in that sphere, it just takes a little bit more energy to be active with other things, communicating with other black magicians, and you know, discussing things on the forum, creating new pieces of art or writing, you know, changing reality in whatever form we can.
Sure, and I think with that being stated, actually, maybe a note needs to be made here in the show that, you know, the Cult of Cthulhu isn't just a philosophy or a religion movement. It's an art movement. It's a literature movement, a music movement. It's an actual movement of imagination.
Right. It's a new way of living, a new way of existing in the world, a new way of interfacing with reality. You're right, it goes deeper than all those things. We've talked about, you know, the sexual aspects as well, you know, the whole linking it with the BDSM type lifestyle with, you know, it's at the core of the whole human experience. And, you know, that's a very sexual thing. Lovecraft's literature is very sexually charged, even if it's a lot of it is sublimated and repressed and beneath the surface. It exists in a very powerful form. In fact, you know, one could say that the sexual impulse or desire is oozing all along the way beneath the surface of Lovecraft's writing, you know, with all the dark lower places and the hidden secret things and the tentacled slimy horrors and, you know, the foul stench and, you know, the visceral, textural sort of anomalies and horrors and, you know, all the hideousness that lives in Lovecraft's writing. That's a very strong sexual element. And human beings, you know, let's admit it, are very sexual beings, you know, whether it's consciously or unconsciously. So I say let's dive in head first and make the Cthulhu cult, you know, a sexual religion, you know, a sex magic religion. You know, let's take that next leap forward, as well as for the dreamers and the artists and the philosophers and the magicians and those in the left-hand path that are seeking to live outside authority, to live lawless and free, and those seeking to become gods themselves. You know, it's the Cthulhu cult isn't just one thing. It's all over the place. It's everything. It's everything that we care about, we want, and that we're going towards. So that's why I think it's the new religion of the ages, and it's the next step in human development and evolution.
Of course, I completely agree with that. It should be, I guess, noted that we definitely have a long-term agenda. And the short-term goals are beginning to really make themselves clean and clear. The steps leading to this, the long-term success of our agenda. Obviously, the agenda itself is, you know, creating a system which is perfect for an awakening. I'm trying to think of the exact wording I want to use. Same time, watch traffic, so everybody will have to bear with me a little bit today. But I think that the putting those tools together and actually truly awakening, you know, there's a few things that are going to happen when somebody does awaken. I think first you'll be horrified.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely horrified. You'll look around and you won't believe the state of things.
Right.
And after that, you know, your brain's going to choose to either get the hell away from it or to, you know, jump back into the system and just pretend like it was a bad dream.
I agree. I think when people are first exposed to these ideas and give them a shot, there's a strong duality response of either accepting or rejecting what they find. If something is too powerful or too disturbing, then a lot of times they'll just reject it and play it off as nonsense or erroneous thinking. But for those that actually give it a chance and are willing to accept it, accept the horror that we're all basically sleeping machines under the thrall of the universe, you know, that's the first step. You know, realizing that you're asleep at the wheel and that you're imprisoned in this giant illusion, you know, that's the first step to escaping. And, you know, for those that take that leap and that want to change, you know, this is the place. This is the organization for you. And it's easier to awaken with others who are also trying to do the same thing than going it alone. I went at it alone for a long time, for, you know, a few years. And it was a devil of a struggle. And I think it's easier now having other people helping me along the path and keeping me disciplined and keeping me, you know, providing shocks every once in a while to keep me going in a straight line. That's definitely important. And anyone else that's interested in the work should hook up with us and start discussing things on our forum and be in touch and, you know, talking about their problems and their dilemmas, their struggles, and their successes. And, you know, it's easier to succeed as a collective, as a group, than it is all on your own. That is really, really hard. So that's another useful thing about the cult.
Right.
For anyone that wants to call in, I know we already have our number up here on blogtalkradio.com/theooze, but phone number is 347-989-1371. For anyone that wants to call in, just discuss anything, ask a question, give us some feedback or make a comment, that would be much appreciated. I'm at the switchboard, refreshing it every once in a while, so call in. If you can't get through, call back in a minute, and we'll try to pick up and talk to you.
There is a there's an interesting phenomenon that's occurred within a specific generation, I think. And this is just, you know, my point of view. I believe anybody who was born between 73 and, I think I would say maybe 79, they've all seemed to come to this kind of consensus. It's understanding that, well, the life as we know it is not receptive to us. It's hostile to us.
Right.
And I think a lot of different philosophies, starting way back even in the 60s, were trying to separate themselves from this horrific existence that we have. But all we've actually been able to manually do is just maintain the speed of the snowball effect.
Right.
And it seems like every year things are getting worse and worse. And I think that the Cult of Cthulhu is just one of many different institutions that are, they're trying to wake themselves up out of this. It's just, I think most of them don't understand that they're asleep.
Yeah.
And this is something that I've actually put a considerable amount of time into discussing with Jason Sorrell. I've got to plug him, of course, because, well, you know, he's always plugging me and looking after me. He's had some really, really fascinating things to say lately on the forum, the Cthulhu official pro board. And so if you guys want to check that out, the web address, if I remember right, is cocthulhu.proboard.com. Is that correct, Eric?
I believe so. Usually what I do is I just go to cultofcthulhu.net, one of our main two websites, and then just click on the front page image, and then click on the discussion board, little green trapezoid with the Cthulhu image in it. Just click on that. It'll take you right to the forum, and then from there you can discuss anything and everything. We've got over 1,000 total members, and we got people posting every day. Sometimes it's more active than others. But, it's a great place to discuss things and to touch base with other people, find other people in your area and start an official Cult of Cthulhu grotto, if you want, or join a grotto and share your artwork and your writing, all that good stuff.
It's completely free form in some fashion. You obviously want to leave the shit disturbing at home, and
right. Yeah, very few people have an attitude, or a dick about things. Very unlike most satanic discussion boards I found, where everyone has a chip on their shoulder, everyone has a huge ego and something to prove. Everyone is an asshole, basically. Not everyone, but like every person. And that's so hard to negotiate and actually get anything done or talk about anything fruitful because, suddenly everyone comes in and wants to, has something to prove and wants to wave their dick in your face and you're just like, God damn it, I just want to, meet people and discuss ideas and see what's out there.
Put them in action.
Yeah, and create some action. And, I don't want all this bullshit. I've been banned from more satanic forums than, probably anyone else. If there's a satanic forum, I probably joined it one time. And I was probably banned at least once because, I'm not going to take any shit from people that don't know me and that I don't know. I come into somewhere... some neutral territory with my ideas, and I don't bash anyone. And then people come at me, and, I'm not going to just back down. I'm going to defend myself. And then if people get upset, then, sooner or later, words fly, and I get banned. And then I'm like, oh, well. So, yeah, the Cult of Cthulhu forum, there's not a lot of that. There's hardly any, if someone just starts out insulting and being a douchebag, then they'll get warned and I put the kibosh on it.
Right. I think that's definitely one of the best highlights about it is that it's a very open and inviting atmosphere. one of the downsides to it is that the people that are there typically tend to be so very vastly intelligent that their attention to one particular subject doesn't always stay for an extended period of time. And so you would be right in the middle of what seems to be a productive discussion, and all of a sudden you're on another discussion, another topic.
Yeah.
But you always have the ability to go back to it or to, further progress it by adding to it. I think one of the things that I have a little bit of difficulty with, and it seems that intellectually, I may at least have met my matches, if not be shadowed slightly by the people that I'm accompanied by.
Yeah, there's some definite brain boxes on the forum. But then there are, more average aligned people that, that fill out the ranks. So it's a pretty diverse group. There always could be more activity. Like there always could be more activity inside and outside of the cult. And activity is important, especially conscious, directed activity. That's kind.
Right. Well, we're actually inside of our 15-minute span for the Undiluted Truth, so I think we can hang our hat up on that pretty well and just say, if Cthulhu cold, it's okay to drink the Kool-Aid.
It is, yes. It tastes pretty good. Tastes like lemon lime.
Beautiful
like
green
lemon
hue.
Lime icy. What's that?
So with a beautiful green hue.
Yes, yes. A lemon lime icy with a beautiful green hue. Or a shot of chartreuse. It's from some movie, the line, drink so nice that they named a color after it. I don't know if the drink came first or if the color came first. Probably the color came first, but I don't know how many people have had chartreuse. It's something.
Absolutely.
It's pretty potent. It's not... it's not like absinthe, but I don't know, maybe it's close or distant relative. One thing I wouldn't mind talking about is, and I'm probably alone in this, I don't think you watch it at all, but I just received season 5 of Lost on DVD, and I've been watching the shit out of that. I'm on like episode 7 already, and I just got it Thursday night. So, and that's fucking awesome. I don't know if anyone ever, watches the show Lost. I think it's really extraordinary. I think it's one of the best things on television. It's intriguing. It's mysterious. It's cool and magical. There's so much that's unknown. It's almost, it almost reminds me of like Lovecraftian stuff. Just for its sheer up mystery and wonder and magicalness, I don't know. But they also talk about philosophy and there's little bits of occultism here and there, which is very cool. Right now they're talking about destiny, and there's a character on the show called John Locke who... A lot of people are convinced that that he's special, that he has some special purpose, and he's been called, and he has a destiny. There's something great about him, something great about what he needs to do. And then, of course, there are other people that denigrate that and him and say that there's nothing special about him and that, he's full of shit or the people saying that he's special and he has a special plan and a destiny. But they're full of shit, and he's just, a regular old man. And he believes that there's a greater purpose out there for him. but he has his doubts, just like everybody who's been called. You know, I have my doubts from time to time, but then new things come to reinforce the idea that that I do have a special plan, and I do have a unique purpose in this world that I'm trying to fulfill. So I think that's cool. I guess that's all I'm going to say about that, because I know you Beast, you don't regularly...
I don't follow it.
Yeah, you don't follow the show, and we don't have any callers, which is kind of lame, but oh well, be that as it may.
That's par for the course. Actually, I wanted to make note of something. On your last video, one of the first couple of comments that came out of the mouth of a character calling himself DJ Strudel. Are you familiar with this comment?
Yeah, I think I am, yes.
Now, what he says in its own context is absolutely hilarious to me.
Okay, refresh my memory.
He says, you've ruined Satanism for me.
Yeah, first I was like, okay, this guy is just, you know, being an ass and trying to run me down. But then I thought of it in a new way, and I think that's maybe what you're getting at. Yeah, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that Satanism, being such an individualistic philosophy as it is, it shouldn't have any kind of outer influence, such as your YouTube videos having a direct effect on his own personal paradigm philosophy.
Yeah.
I mean, by itself, the statement by itself, it calls him a hypocrite. It calls him a deceiver, a sheep.
Yes.
You know, not even using, you know, any other terms but his own words. How can you ruin something for somebody else that's of their own manifestation, you know?
Right. Well, yeah, in a way I kind of took it as a compliment, because maybe I throw a new sort of illumination on Satanism, which casts doubt or skepticism in people's eyes. You know, now I feel inspired to make a new blog post and put it on www.cthulhu-cult.com and entitle it "I Ruin Satanism for Everybody," and just talk about, you know, my personal struggles and how Satanism doesn't go far enough. It doesn't. It's not doing what it should be. You know, it was fine for the 20th century, but I think for the 21st century, you know, Satanists have to change a little bit. They've got to
evolve. Yeah, that would be the idea.
They've got to evolve. They have to mature in a certain way. Not to say that I'm more mature or I'm better than anybody else, but I mean, people can create their own religion or do their own thing. They don't always have to join me. But I think Satanism is in a stagnant place, and it's not even
it's
not moving. It's not progressing. So, you know, people need to do something else. Whether they need to do something like what I'm doing, or just do something different on their own. Something has to be done. If I'm the one to ruin Satanism, then so be it.
I thought it was extremely hilarious. The very next comment that popped up was, he's not a Satanist, he's a Cthulhu cultist. And I just thought that was like...
Right.
That was
there are a lot of people on MySpace that are like, I can't be friends with you because you're a Satanist. And then I usually tell them, technically I'm not a Satanist. I've got my own religion, and it's not Satanism. It's completely different. I mean, there are similarities. They're both left-hand path religions or philosophies or whatever you want to call it. But they're very different at the same time. So I'm not a Satanist, and I'm challenging Satanism in itself and Satanists as a whole to evolve. You know, evolve or die. That's basically your two choices in this world we live in. So, I don't know. People can do what they want. You know, people can stay at the level they're at, or they can try to progress to a new level. It's up to them. I'm trying to show people the way. And if people want to follow, that, you know, not necessarily follow me, but follow the example I set, then that's wonderful. If people don't want to do that, I don't know what they're going to do. I don't know if, you know, they're just going to stay asleep and work on their little things and get mad and upset at, you know, all the other sleepers out there, and then grow old and die, you know, just like 99% of the population, or are they going to break out and break through reality, you know, challenge their own paradigm and make something of themselves, change reality, you know, that's the other option. So, you know, if you want to do that, I'm right here all the time. If you don't want to do that, then good luck.
Absolutely. I think that there are key words that have really resonated with the philosophies of the cult. And one of those is kind of hidden in its understanding, or maybe it's just too generally accepted, but I think transformation or change is that word, and it's a very strong and powerful concept.
Right.
I think that it's maybe not embraced enough in, you know, amongst the human condition. You know, we live in a domain that's full of, you know, predictability, and even chaotic disasters are to some extent with predictability.
Right. Yeah, you know, you think a wide enough swath of phenomenons or you know, stuff that happens. You know, you take a wider, more open algorithm, and really you can account for everything, you know, mathematically or, you know, in physics.
I mean, we know, you know, that we're going to have winter months from, you know, November to February, March, and then we're going to start to move into the spring season, and then after that we'll follow summer, and thus back into autumn, and then into winter. You know, one of the things that sticks in my head here is, in 2004, I lived in Fort Myers, Florida, and was only really just a few miles from where the center of Hurricane Charlie came across and basically devastated this entire town. And the thing about it was there was so much warning going into it of where it could possibly hit, and there was so much time given, and yet people apathetically didn't really do much about it, you know, put some boards up over their windows and you know, leave town.
Well, the government didn't do a lot because it was mostly affecting poor people, and, you know, doesn't get about that, so they're like, oh yeah, by the way, you know, there's a good chance the disaster is going to strike, so, you know, do what you can. Good luck.
What's even crazier about that? I'm sorry.
One last thing that I wanted to say is that also it's in keeping with you know, the way of things, the natural way of the world, to throw up mutations and unique things and things that you don't expect, like 70 degree weather in late November in Wisconsin. You know, that's like the last thing people were thinking. But every once in a while it happens. And And that's just, that's also part of nature. It's like in the Matrix, you know, Neo out, and that's a part of, you know, the process or the machine or the algorithm. That's what it's all about, you know. Every once in a while, nature is doing that.
Awesome. Well, we've got to be nearing the end of the show, I'm assuming.
I think we're, I think it ended.
Oh, we're still just yammering?
Maybe. I think a thing just came up. Show is on, but not streaming.
Yeah.
I don't know what that means. I think we're done.
That does mean we're done, but they can still hear this last portion, so.
Not
live broadcast, but an archive, they can hear it. With that, I guess I'll start the thank yous and get us the hell out of here.
Okay. Well, I don't know if we have to do any thank yous this week. I mean.
Oh, I think we owe at least one big thank you.
Okay. Go ahead.
My big thank you is to the recently reinvigorated Wizards of Terrible Darkness. This past week on the forum, they've been extremely inspiring to me. And come across with some really great ideas and really great things to discuss. And I think they're all doing really great work, and I'd love to just keep see it coming.
Yes, that's great. Yes, I would like to thank the Wizards of Terrible Darkness, too, and to all the new wizards that hopefully we will find in the near future, and keep the cult strong and shock it into staying on task and in the right direction. That's it.
So until next week, fuckers.
Until next week. Adios.